show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a baseball prospectus affiliate. Folks, I think we have some Royals baseball to talk about. You know, it just kind of feels like they're just kind of riding the wave. They don't really have – there's not really been a ton of really exciting things going on one way or the other. But before we get into that, introductions, I, of course, am Jeff Herr. As always, with me is the indefatigable Michael Engel. He's here for the long haul, folks. Mike, how are you doing on this muggy Kansas City evening? Or Kansas City / Kansas evening?
It is. It's always muggy. These evenings are muggy, yes, every single time. It's this summer's terrible, and I hate it. I don't know.
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah. I just, like, every year it's like, I really like spring because it's usually fairly temperate. And, you know, maybe it'll get into like 80 or so, and that's mm-hmm. fine. That's okay. But, God, when it's 95 every day and it's been so humid all summer, just I hate that. I don't know.
Yeah, that sucks pretty hard.
It's just like, And to me, like, the winter's better because it's like you can always add layers. You can always, like, throw on a blanket. You can get a space heater. You know, so many different ways that you can stay warm. There's a certain point in the summer you can't do anything. You know, there's only mm-hmm. so many fans you can have running, and there's only so low you can, you know, put your air conditioner. And there's only so much you can do, and it really kind of sucks this summer in particular. But I don't know, probably said that last year too. So maybe that's not a fair assessment of the weather, which I am not an expert in.
No, unfortunately not. And we're, unlike some of the radio stations in town, we can't get someone like Gary Lezak to come on and inform us. So
it's true.
I mean, what are you going to do?
We could pretend. We could have somebody just make stuff up. But
we're really good at that, actually.
Yeah.
So we could do that.
We could.
Instead, we can make up things to talk about the Royals, like how they're on a huge winning streak. That's made up.
They won 30 games in a row. It was amazing.
It's incredible.
Actually, you would never imagine that would ever happen.
My dream, actually, was that the praying mantis would spark a 50-game win streak and the Royals would just be like the greatest story in sports history and go and win another World Series. But it doesn't appear that's going to be the case.
You know, up until one of those little fluke hits in the 10th inning last night, either Abreu or Morneau, kind of seemed like that's kind of how it was. The Royals got behind. They ended up tying it kind of out of nowhere in the bottom of the ninth. And it looked like they were going to get through the inning. But then, you know, I don't know what the heck the White Sox were doing. They're swinging at sliders out of the zone, and they end up finding a hole and going for hits. And then Herrera, I think, just tried to get a ball over, and Todd Frazier hit it really far. And the Royals ended up losing, and the rally mantis was scuttled away as quickly as it arrived. But it felt kind of like one of those dumb, weird talismans that kind of worked, kind of like in 2014. They had, you know, so many different things that went right, and they went on a run. And last year they were just strong all year. It's just like,
yeah. I mean, you had, you know, the Rex Hudler probably knows very well. The Angels had the rally monkey for quite a long period of time. I think did that start with the World Series win they had in 2002? Was that the year that started, or was that after that?
I think it was that year, yeah. I think it was sometime that summer.
So they rode that monkey to the championship. I'm not sure how that exactly started, if it was just like a joke that they played on the video board and then people loved it. Maybe they had one of those, like, the monkeys riding a dog cowboy things, you know, like in the seventh inning or something. I love those.
And they came back from that. I don't remember where that originated.
Can we talk about the poor state of professional sports at game entertainment, right? Like, okay, I have season tickets to the Chiefs game, right? And the level of quality in the halftime performances, it's shit. No offense to the people that perform. They do a great job. But relatively speaking, you know, it's just like, this is not that entertaining. And half the time it's the Chiefs cheerleaders who, no offense to them, I know they try very hard. But again, relatively speaking, they're not very good as far as cheerleading goes. So what are you going to do? But like, you know, baseball, they have a smaller amount of time. So it's harder to get good acts, you know, but there's things they can do. Mm-hmm. And what do we get? We get condiment races.
Right.
You know, and then we get you know, all that does is turn Twitter into a place of toxicity, talking about ketchup on your hot dog. And then it then just the whole thing burns down and we start talking about whether or not a hot dog is a sandwich. Right. And if we just had a monkey riding a dog, not a single person would have a problem with that.
Right? It would distract everybody from dumb, petty arguments.
That's right.
Immediately.
And shitty baseball as well. Right. But I mean, we're out here solving problems. What we're doing in the Kansas City Baseball Vault. That's all we're doing. So if the Royals are listening, then go ahead and get yourself some monkeys, get yourself some dogs, put your hands together, and let's get some entertainment on this field, right? Because the Royals surely are not providing much of it these days.
Not really, no.
Truly unfortunate.
They're kind of, I don't know, they're kind of boring. It's like you get to this stage, you know, after so many years where the Royals, in 2013, they were in it up until the last week, and it was you had so many different scenarios that you could get into. And I remember there were a couple of those games in that September where every game felt a little different, and it was like you really hadn't had that feeling watching the Royals. And then in 2014, obviously, they make the playoffs. So many things went well. They had that big streak in August. They were going back and forth for first place with Detroit. I mean, that was a lot of fun to watch. And then last year, obviously, they were cruising pretty much all season. And then this year, it's a real big letdown that they're six games under 500 entering tonight, and they're behind so many different teams. It's just tough to really get that fired up about it, because you can, you know, for me, I can see the writing on the wall. I think some people still kind of believe I think it's just too steep a hill to climb. And, you know, there's other stuff going on. And so I'm not as transfixed on the game like the last couple of seasons, which, you know, I guess that's natural, but it's still, you know, it's still such a weird, different feeling.
Mm-hmm. I mean, last year there was an easy feeling around it, right? So it was, you know, you felt good about going into every game. You knew the Royals could compete with anyone. That was clear from the start of the season. And you always felt that the ball was going to bounce their way. You always felt they were going to come back. And the majority of the time they did. They won 95 games, you know. But this season, basically ever since they hit that 12-6 mark early on in the season, you know, which was still a damn good start. And we thought they were going to be cruising again, or we hoped they were going to be cruising again. The feeling was quite a bit more uneasy, you know. And then you've got – then – Moustakas and Gordon get hurt, and then things start to slowly unravel. They put together some runs, and the next thing you know, I mean, they were 30-22 was the highlight, the high point of the season. I think they had won like six games in a row, and then after that they lost eight games, and I don't know if they've been more than three games above 500 since that time. So that was kind of – that was the beginning of the end, if you will, to get to that. And now we're here. And, you know, it's funny – you talk about differences over seasons. Last year, if there was a Royals game going on, but I didn't happen to be watching it at the time, you know, I get the updates on my phone, so it vibrates, gives a noise, whatever. So if I'm doing something, my wife and I are on a walk, we're going to the store, whatever, then I get a beep or a buzz on my phone. I'm like, oh, sweet, the Royals probably scored. And then I looked at it, and boom, majority of the time I was right. This year, I'll be giving my daughter a bath, or we'll be putting her to bed or something. So I usually miss the beginning of the Royals games for the ones that I'm able to watch. And so if I get, you know, it used to be the first notification I got, like I said, Royals, awesome. And then now, I, as soon as I hear a buzz, I don't even want to look at my phone because I'm like, oh, crap, Kennedy gave up a home run in the first inning again. What are we going to do? And the majority of the time, I'm right. So, you know, that's fun. It's an interesting dichotomy to see, like, okay, right, 3-4 years ago, 2012, you know, were they 70-71 and 91 that year? So they, you know, if we would have gone, or if the Royals would have gone 500, you know, 2013, people were so happy. They were 10 games above 500. They were in it. You know, we were just like, man, that was a fun season. You know, I remember it. We were like, oh, it was, even though they were never truly in the race the second half, you know, that, well, they truly were, but they were never truly really considered to be contenders and by many estimations, but it still felt like they were in it. It was as close as we felt. There was, I think we said it at the time, that it was as close to playoffs as we'd been, or at least someone like myself had been in my lifetime. So that was really cool. But then now we actually seen the playoffs and we know what it feels like. We know what it takes as fans for the team. I think people are having a hard time coping with the fact that it's not going their way and they're probably going to have a losing record this year. And I think the sort of subtext of that fear is, okay, it's all over now. You know, the window is slammed shut and it's back to 65, 70 win teams year in and year out until, you know, something magical happens 30 years from now. And I don't blame a lot of fans for having that kind of irrational fear in the back of their head. You know, it's as Sam Mellinger would always say, that the Royals fan skepticism is comes about honestly, but it's a little premature, I think. But, you know, it's just kind of in a microcosm shows how difficult this season has been both for the team and the fans.
Yeah. And it baseball's hard. Like, you don't get a lot of repeat World Series appearances. You don't get, you know, the Royals were really close to winning two World Series in a row. Like, they're you time things a little bit differently, you know, in Game 7 in 2014, and, man, they might win that game. Mm. And maybe, you know, you can't say, okay, well, 2015 is going to play out exactly the same, because, like, there might be a sliver of an element of that, you know, we got to prove it again kind of thing that really propelled them in 2015. But it was largely the same team. You know, you switch out Shields for Volquez, and that's pretty much the biggest change. You know, Butler and Morales, I mean, that's another big one. But more or less, it was the same team. And it's the same team pretty much that started this year. And it's more or less the same team that will start next year. And so, you know, I think a lot of people freaking out now are kind of trying to get ahead and say, well, yeah, the Royals are bad again. And I don't think that you can really say that. I don't think you can say that a team that goes from 86 wins to 89 wins to 95 wins over the last 3 years, averaging 90 wins a season, suddenly half the team is hurt and they don't storm back out to that kind of level. I mean, that makes sense that a team won't be able to reach that level again. And when most of those guys are going to be back next season, I don't see how it's such a panic to think that, okay, well, they've lost some games with basically the B team. What's it mean for next year? Well, I don't know how much it means anything for next year. Because, you know, the team that starts next year is going to be fully healthy. It's going to be a team that maybe they bring Volquez back. Jason Vargas should be back. We'll see what happens with the bullpen. That might be a little hairier situation than this year. But for the most part, you're going to be bringing a lot of the same guys back this year that you started the year with. And you had high expectations to start this year. So I don't see how it follows beyond guys maybe aging, why next year's team would be that poor. You know, on paper, they're not that different from the last few teams. So I think that's kind of freaking people out, that they kind of have that dual panic of, we don't want it to get dark again. And if next year is our only hope for that to stave off that really poor season, well, you can't be as optimistic because this year didn't go well. And that makes some sense, but I think people are just on edge. I think that the standard for what is a good and bad season has changed so quickly and drastically from what we're used to that, you know, it used to be you finished 500. That's good. 2013 was a good year. People were excited. People were happy. They were satisfied with that. Mm-hmm. You know, you win 70, you know, there used to be days where you win that 63rd game and you're happy because you can't lose 100 that season.
Yep. And, I remember those days.
And it's just like now the Royals might be like 78 and 84 or something. And people are going to say that it's a travesty. It's just, you know, the perspective has shifted so much. Yeah. That I just think that it's, I think it's too sharp of a recoil. And I think it's a lot of it is probably because we're still adjusting to this kind of spot where the Royals have some expectations and merely getting to 78 wins with some promise, you know, like, you know, I don't know if that's what they won in 2011, but, you know, that's going to be a team that, no, what did they do? It was like 71 wins. I don't know, whatever.
172.
Yeah. Because they got one win more the next season.
Yeah.
So many, you know. But whatever, you know, 78 wins with, you know, exciting players or something isn't going to cut it right now. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe in 2 years when you start to see, okay, maybe after 2017 everybody leaves, you have to rebuild a little bit. Then maybe it's something where you win 76 games with Hunter Dozier and Chesler Cuthbert and maybe Kyle Zimmer and AJ Puckett and, you know, this guy and that guy, Jake Junis, those are your starters or something. Then maybe, yeah, you know, 76, 78 wins with a group like that can be exciting because there's something on the horizon. But right now, you know, I think we're still rung up on winning the World Series and not necessarily being able to adjust the idea that, okay, a lot of guys are hurt and a lot of guys have been hurt and a lot of guys haven't performed the same, but, you know, it's not all lost. And I think I see a lot of that, at least right now, which they're not playing well. So it's, you know, that's what happens, but I think it's a little reactionary.
Yeah. You know, I do think you're onto something. I think there's a matter of an issue of perspective that people have in how wildly it's skewed. Like, I don't think many fans have really taken a step back, and you talked about it yourself, but like, I don't think there's many fans that have taken a step back and really been like, you know, wow, how impressive it is to win two pennants and to win a World Series. I mean, you think about like, How many GMs, right, have done what Dayton Moore has done, or I mean, have said what Dayton Moore has said when he came to Kansas City, right? Literally every one of them, right? Every single GM says, mm-hmm. I'm here to bring a championship to fill in the town, okay? And how many of them do it? You know, some of them, of course, obviously.
One a year. The Giants do it a few times a decade. That's kind of it.
And it's one of those things where, you know, we don't really realize. I mean, how many GMs are constantly have never won a World Series, are turned out, fired, you know, brought in? Allard Baird, the predecessor to Dayton Moore. I mean, he was going to bring a championship. He was the hot commodity on the market. He flamed out. He got fired. You know, it wasn't necessarily, you know, we don't have to get into how much of it was his fault and how much he was hamstrung, but just kind of as a, and then you look at, okay, I'm drawing a blank. Washington Nationals. Who's the Nationals GM?
Rizzo.
Mike Rizzo. Yeah. So, you know, he has amassed an incredible amount of talent there in Washington. You know, obviously, Bryce Harper may be arguably the most talented player on the planet. You know, Steven Strasburg, one of the great pitchers. Jordan Zimmerman is not there anymore, but they, you know, he was there, and they had there's a ton of talent on that team. And you look at 2012, right? That was their, you know, the 2012 Nationals was their version of the 2015 Royals. You know, they had everything working. They were the best team in baseball from basically start to finish, and you know they couldn't come through. Maybe if they don't shut down Strasburg and they let him pitch. And I believe they lost in the fifth game of the NLDS that year. So, you know, maybe Strasburg pitches that game and they don't lose. And maybe they end up, who knows? But the point is they didn't. And, you know, they haven't been to the World Series. They haven't won two pennants. And they have the best player on the planet and maybe one of the best pitchers on the planet. So it's like, it's just so incredibly hard to do what they've done. And then now all of a sudden there's kind of this weird, like, almost taking it for granted now. Just a year removed even to where we're saying, you know, oh, this is a bad, you know, this is a bad season. We don't, you know, this is unacceptable. And right. Obviously you want them to do better, you know, but I mean, they've got, like you mentioned it, all the injuries and everything, you know, it's, there's no reason, the team as constructed when fully healthy is not a bad team. The team as it is now, it's not that, I don't know if I'll call them bad. They're not good though.
No.
And you know, it's,
they're very flawed.
And you also got to wonder, like, the Royals, however much you want to talk about, you know, we've never been huge believers in abstract concepts like momentum on this show. But if you want to think about, you know, the Royals more than any other team, I think it's visible almost how they kind of feed off of each other and off of just, you know, whatever it is that propels them forward. So you wonder, Kelvin Herrera blew a save last night. And or not a save, but took a loss last night, gave up some crucial runs. Yep. And you look at, that would not have happened in years past. So there's two possible scenarios then, or not years past, but the last couple of years. So two possible scenarios. Either one, Kelvin Herrera has gotten worse, which is entirely possible. But based on the first half of the season, seems unlikely because he's been quite incredible. He's an all-star. Or option number two, you know, that it's not as easy to perform at such a high level consistently when you're, you know, having struggles like the Royals have, when you're not healthy. Those things weigh on you mentally, you know, and it's not a good excuse. It's not necessarily something that should happen, but you have to wonder. You know, at least I wonder sometimes if that does play a role, because we saw it last year. The Royals just, they fed on it so much. And we talked about that in when they had their semi slide in August, if that was a concern, if it was just so tough to keep that mental energy up that high for that long, and if the Royals would be able to do it. And they were, but it was definitely a question that was raised. And now it's kind of the reverse. You know, it's not a struggle to keep that high intensity. It's a struggle to get the intensity high because there's someone to, and every time they stack those Jenga blocks, there's somebody to come in and pull one right out from the bottom, and the whole thing falls over again. So it's really been an interesting dynamic this season.
Well, if we go back to, like, when we talked to Jonah Carey back in June, you know, one of the things that he was kind of pointing out was that, yeah, there's a lot of good fortune that the Royals ran into. I mean, they, you know, the sequencing, the balls in play, the contact, things like that. Yeah, that was fortunate. It was, I think some of it was a little bit lucky, but I think for the most part, you've got players who can do those kinds of things. And so, you know, if you've got players with that kind of skill set and that kind of talent and that kind of energy, then it can compound on itself and something works out. This year we've seen that they're not making as much contact. They're not hitting as well. The offense is not as productive, you know, and that kind of thing. You know, when you've got a bunch of guys who have really good seasons, Kendrys Morales had a great year. Moustakas had a great year. Hosmer had a good year. Sal had a great power year. You know, all these different things work together. And in a lot of ways, the only way you can go is down. If those are career years, well, then pretty much by definition, you're not going to be as good the next year. And I think there's some of that at play. Plus, when you have a poorly performing offense and the starting pitching struggles the Royals have had, it makes that margin for error so slim that you have to be almost perfect. You know, and even Wade Davis gave up runs last year. HDH in 2014 gave up runs. Herrera gives up runs. You know, it happens. Pitchers give up runs at some point. And you can't just expect them to be perfect all the time. So if it turns out that the day that they're not sharp or that they make a bad pitch turns out to be in a big spot like that, you know, there's not much you can do about it. I mean, it's going to happen. You just kind of got to hope that it works at a time that isn't going to hurt you as much, or that you've had enough other good performances throughout that, you know, it's, you've got like three other wins that you've banked because things worked out better. You hit better, you had better starting pitching. You weren't trailing 5-0 in the second inning, for a week or something like that. And I think the Royals have run into those kind of problems. And, you know, when you've got to make those kind of 3-5 run comebacks and your offense is not suited to do that, then it makes it even more important for you to get those good starts. And then, you know, if you don't get a good start, it just kind of crushes the whole game. And they've run into that so many times that it probably is a little bit taxing on them to run into that. Now, teams do have to get through that. They have to adjust. They have to deal with it. But, you know, you could see how if you play somewhere in like June where they just kept giving up runs in the first inning, like four games in a row. And it's like, what are you going to do there? You know, if you're a team that a good night is five runs, you know, if you're down by four after one inning and six after two, you pack it in. You know, you can try to chip away, but the Royals aren't a team that are going to get a lot of 2-3 run homers, and you're not going to be able to bunt guys around. And as the game goes on, you run out of outs to work with. So it just doesn't work in the Royals' favor for the style that they have. And I guess if there's a critique, that's something that you could ding them on. But at the same time, it worked well for 3 years. And so I don't think that it's unfair to expect for some things to carry over. You know, as we've talked about numerous times, I mean, if you've got contact guys, you're going to possibly have an opportunity to make more things happen. With the defense making mistakes or a ball finding a hole or this or that works out, and you can maybe string things together. And this year it hasn't happened. And in some cases it's players who aren't as good or aren't as talented or aren't as comfortable with the moment. And you're trying to adjust on the fly. You know, it's not like you get to take a week off and form a strategy. These guys have to hit the ground running. You call it Raul Mondesi and he's got to do it day one. You know, there's a learning curve and they're not going to ask him to lead off and expect him to hit 300, but you know, he's got to produce something. And you know, that's the struggle that they run into when you're cycling in on these guys who really don't have a lot of experience at this level. And again, that's not to make an excuse, but it is something that a lot of teams will deal with, and the Royals aren't particularly dealing with it as well as maybe other teams have, or they're dealing with it in a way that a lot of teams do have to deal with it. You know, the Giants, they win the World Series, then they miss the playoffs. Win the World Series, miss the playoffs. Win the World Series, miss the play. You know, it's difficult, and things will adjust and correct themselves. And the Royals right now are, you know, they're seeing a correction in health and in performance and things like that. And, you know, hopefully it's a bounce back next year. You know, after if next year's bad too, then you know, you probably see a lot more panic just because people know that these guys are going to be free agents, and Hosmer and Escobar and Davis and so on and so forth. And that's going to be a test, because the next wave isn't really a wave so much as a, you know, spare parts filling in. It's not like 2011 where
more
you
of
got
a sprinkler than a wave.
Yeah. Like in May and June, you got Hosmer, Duffy and Moustakas came up. And then in August it was Sal. I mean, those are four key players, and that it's not the same kind of thing. Now, you know, maybe Cuthbert becomes that kind of guy. Maybe Mondesi becomes that kind of guy. You know, I guess we'll see, but it's, you know, it's a different year, and expectations change. Players regress a little bit. I think we both predicted 90 or 91, 92 wins or something.
I think 92 is what I had.
Yeah, we're not going to get that. But
not happening.
But we also didn't figure that everybody was going to get hurt.
Yes.
And that the starting pitching was going to crater and things like that. So, you know, I guess it was just kind of due. And now we're paying the bill for a lot of good luck. And you know what? I'll take it if that means that the World Series flag flies for the rest of our days.
They don't make you take it down next year.
Right.
It's there for good. And, you know, you mentioned the Giants, and I was going to bring them up. So you're kind of on the same line of thinking. You know, you talk about how they missed the playoffs. They've won three World Series in the last 5 years, but they missed the playoffs each year in between, 6 years, I guess. But you look at 2013, after they had won their second World Series in 3 years, you know, they had a 76-86 record, right? And they, I mean, that was almost, just looking at their results, I mean, very similar to the Royals this year. You know, they started off 13-7, probably looking pretty good, feeling good. They were 28-22 at one point, and then they just kind of hit a nosedive, and then all the way to, you know, at this point in the season, they were, let's see, 46-57, you know, so not the exact same point, but roughly. And then they finished 16 games back. And then you look at the Rangers, you know, they did what was very difficult, winning two pennants in a row as well. And, you know, then they had a couple of years after that they did well. They had four straight seasons of 90-plus wins, and then 2014 comes along. And they had 65 wins. I mean, they had the same situation as the Royals. Like, everyone got hurt. Just everyone.
Yeah, I think they probably used like 60 players that year.
Yeah, I mean, they had 25 people on the DL or something. It was just nuts.
Just, you know, sometimes you just got to get through it. And, you know, now the Rangers are a talented team still.
They made the playoffs last year, took the Blue Jays to the brink. And then, you know, now they're one of the best teams in the American League. So, you know, it's definitely not something where you can just, you know, there's some precedence here that you can, you know, you can take leaps forward and then you can take a step back before then taking another step forward again or two steps forward. So it's, you know, I'm not trying to predict the Royals are going to win the World Series or anything like that next year, but there's no reason to think that this year becomes the new baseline versus the previous three, because the previous three seems like the more reliable sample size for a healthy team next year.
Yep. They will be older, and I will that kind of concern, but, you know, they're not that removed. They're not that.
Some of it older. Is good because you've got, you know, Hosmer is 1 year further into his prime. Moustakas will be 1 year further into his prime. You know, it starts to become problematic when you have Lorenzo Cain, who becomes a year deeper onto the other side of 30. Same deal for Alex Gordon. You know, those and pitchers, their, you know, primes seem to work differently. So them, you know, pitchers aging is essentially just never a good thing.
Right.
the more wear and tear you can put on a pitcher, the worse it is, unless you're a scientific freak like Madison Bumgarner, who I hate. But that's okay.
Right.
Good for him. Good for him.
Right.
Yeah.
If it anyway, works for him, fantastic.
You know, they're going to win a World Series again. See, I don't – actually, now that the Royals are essentially, for all intents and purposes, out of it, I almost kind of like – I almost want the Giants to win just because, like –
Just
I think it'd be funny just to keep that – just
it'll kick a lot of people off because then it's like a real thing.
It's like when the Spurs had the odd year thing back in the early 2000s when they won every time. I mean, it's – it'd just be funny to me. I mean, that'd be – plus, that's just like it's so insane. 4 and 6 years they would have won. 7 years.
Like, that's nuts. Gross. That's just – I'd be ticked off of that too.
So, yeah.
Depends on who they would beat. If they beat like the Blue Jays, I'm cheering Giants.
Oh, hell yes.
Easily.
I mean, the dream scenario would be like, okay, you're the Giants. You beat the Cubs in the first round. Okay, then the DS.
Dream crushers.
And then you beat the Cardinals. And then I don't even think they're going to make the
Cardinals
playoffs,
probably won't make the playoffs. But that would be fun.
That's why this is the dream scenario.
Right.
And they beat the Cardinals in the NLCS. And then they go on and beat the Blue Jays. Oh, that'd be so fantastic.
That would be really cool.
I think Blue Jays, okay. Here's two questions. Around the same central idea. So, from the last, the Royals have made some enemies from the last two playoff runs. Okay, so who do you hate the most now as a team, based on the Royals' recent success, and who do you think hates the Royals the most?
You know, for me, it seems like there's more disdain for the Blue Jays from the Royals side. Like, you know, Royals, I'm thinking Royals fans, like the Blue Jays lose. That's a fun day because the Blue Jays fan base is, they're supportive. I'll give them that credit. They're also, how to put it, a little delusional in some ways. You know, you've got a whole country. So, I mean, things are going to come out of the woodwork. That's just kind of what happens. So it's more fun when the Royals beat the Blue Jays than, say, the Orioles, who I think Orioles fans legit really hate the Royals. But I don't know if maybe I'm just projecting because Jason LaConfora is such an immense troll as an Orioles fan. And the MASN guy, one of their, I think, radio guy, is kind of the same thing. And they both just really, whatever dig they can put into the Royals, they will do. So maybe that makes it stick out. But it also seems like when the Royals were in Baltimore, there was a lot more angst than when the Royals were in Toronto. And other than that, like Houston, it's not really that big of a thing. Like, they beat Houston, but it wasn't that big of a deal. The Angels, same thing. So maybe it's just that heightened, maybe it's just the LCS factor that amps it up so much that's why Orioles fans can't get over it and why Royals fans are so gleeful in beating the Blue Jays. I don't know.
I feel like part of the problem may be the Angels, because the Royals started, was it the very first season in 2015 against the Angels? Or was it just early in the season?
It was early in the season. It was like the first road trip in 2015.
Yeah, they were definitely upset still from 2014, and you could kind of feel it
something
spilling over. But you know, they did so poorly last season, and they're doing poorly this season. I think that they're just kind of tuned out a little bit, if you will. So I think
that would make sense.
If they won 95 games again last year and they were in first place this year and they just couldn't get past the Royals, I think that might be a little bit different.
Right. But that's kind of how the Yankees and Royals thing kind of worked out too.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, we just can't. You someday we're going to beat those guys and you just hate them.
Yeah. So I feel like that might have something to do with it. And Houston, I think they were just so kind of the 2014 Royals-ish, kind of just so happy to be there, win the wild card game, get into the playoffs. And obviously it's heartbreaking to lose the way that they did. But also, you know, just kind of like, hey, it was a great season. That was a fun ride. Didn't expect to be there. And now here we are. So that's cool. The future looks bright for the Astros, you know, at that time. So that's, I can see why they wouldn't be like, okay, you know, it was the Royals year. That was their thing. But the Blue Jays, that was their year, you know, last year. I think that's why they're so, and I do feel the
last 2 months of the season, they were,
I mean, they were good in every stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just dominant, and they had, I mean, they thought it was their year because it had been, was it 93 was the last time they won a World Series. So it's not like, you know, it had been that much more recent than the Royals, only 8 years or eight years more recent than the Royals. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they had still had a long drought, and they had the same deal. They hadn't made the playoffs since they'd last won a World Series either. So for them, it was a very similar situation, and the Royals just kind of took it away.
Yes, they did. And it was great.
It was so glorious. And, you know, I guess we'll finish up with this last kind of topic. Maybe we'll, some positivity for the future. You've kind of peppered these things throughout and some of the things that you've said throughout the show, but some people we can talk about here. Number one, somebody we haven't talked about yet, a fellow by the name of Matt Strom.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about Chester Cuthbert as well. You mentioned him a little earlier, if whether or not he's the real deal, you know, we'll see or not. But it's and Raul Mondesi, who we haven't spent a ton of time talking about, but he's starting to look a little bit more comfortable, making some better contact and some better defensive plays out at second base. So, you know, there's some reason to be optimistic for the future, not just because people are coming back, but there's, like you said, it's more of a sprinkler than a wave, but there's something coming. And Matt Strom, he's a reliever now. You probably figures to be a reliever next season if he's still on the team, or on the major league team, I should say. But yeah, he's a possible starter in his future. And I don't know that he's a top end guy, but he can stick there. So there's definitely some things, you know, as we go the rest of the way, that could be some real positive aspects for the future.
Yeah, and like the thing that kind of works for me in that kind of realm is that, you know, Mondesi is a top prospect, and he's somebody that we've kind of always figured, all right, he's going to do something. With Cuthbert, you weren't sure. I mean, last year he looked comfortable. He looked like he belonged, but the numbers weren't there. This year he came up, numbers weren't there after some, you know, after the league adjusted to him. But then when he came back after Moose's second injury, well, you know, all he's done since really is hit and looks the part. He looks like he can be a guy who can actually stick at this level, do something at this level. So that's nice for somebody who's kind of been in the system forever. He's only 23, but he's been in the system since he was 16 or whatever. So, it's good to kind of get that guy to come out of it. Strom is someone who kind of came out of nowhere. Just the other night, you know, 5 strikeouts in 2 innings, and he's already filling out like a setup role, you know, and his stuff is just so good. So to get a guy to kind of come out of nowhere is nice. And then you get, even guys like Alec Mills and Jake Junis in the minors who might be possible guys next year to kind of look at some starts. You know, that's the kind of thing that the Royals really kind of need out of this group, especially after trading so many arms last summer to get Cueto and Zobrist. Well, now you got to refill, and you don't really have, you know, Almonte's having a rough season. You know, no control, no command. Zimmer obviously is hurt and just had the thoracic outlet surgery, and you can't really expect anything out of him going forward just because you don't know. And so they really needed something to come up. So if that means that next year Jake Junis and Alec Mills, you know, can be a serviceable combination in that fifth starter spot, that's nice. You know, you get that opportunity to kind of see some guys you weren't expecting a lot from who can maybe contribute and help you out a little bit. And that's the kind of thing that the Royals would need to kind of get back into a contention, have some stability, and also to kind of carry it forward because, you know, like we've talked about, you know, the system is kind of torn up. You know, they've traded a lot of guys. A lot of guys haven't materialized, or they've been promoted or traded or whatever. And so you have to kind of get that from somewhere else. And it looked like there was no hope of that. And now there's at least some hope of that. And that's nice.
Yeah. And we get, you know, we still get reminded of the fact that, okay, 2017 is the earmarked year for the end of the Royals window, if you will. But you've also got Alex Gordon will be back past 2017. So hopefully this year can kind of be chalked up to just him really struggling with being healthy, injuries, and he can get back on track next year and be a more productive offensive player. He's still got the good defense. Salvador Perez, he's going to be here past 2017. Yordan Ventura is going to be here past 2017. Ian Kennedy possibly could be here past 2017. So, you know, they've still got some pieces there of a veteran presence who have seen the wins they've seen. And there's, you know, between Alcides Escobar, Lorenzo Cain, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Danny Duffy, you know, if you want to consider those the 5 core guys that are going to be gone after 2017, there's a good bet, I would say greater than 50% likelihood, that at least one of those people will be back. You know, maybe they break the bank for mm-hmm. Hosmer. Maybe they give Danny Duffy kind of a sweetheart contract that he wants to sign because he wants to stay. You know, maybe they work out a similar, maybe Alex Gordon light type of deal for Lorenzo Cain. Who knows? But, you know, I definitely think there's going to be at least one of those 5 guys back. You know, so then you're looking at 4 or 5 starters that have the experience, have the leadership skills, have everything necessary that can kind of help usher these guys in when you start talking about Cuthbert and Mondesi. And, you know, Strom and possibly Junis and, you know, God willing, we have a Kyle Zimmer sighting at Kauffman Stadium. You know, who knows? Bubba Starling? Who knows?
Oh,
you know?
Boy, Bubba.
Two top five picks.
I haven't even thought of Bubba Starling that much.
I haven't either. This will be fun. Let's look up what I haven't even.
Oh, don't look him up.
I'm doing it. I'm going to do it. All right, let's see. Oh, no. This will be fun.
He's been hurt the last, like, 2 weeks, though, too. I think, like, a hand injury or something.
Don't know that we would be able to tell the difference.
It's pretty true.
Let's see. It's Bubba, not Bibba. That'd be a
maybe he needs to earn the U.
Yes, that's exactly what needs to happen. Let's see. Okay, got it up. He's 202. He's over the 200 line in AAA, 32 games.
Yeah,
he got AA could not contain him after 62 games this year with the 185 batting average. You just can't stop a player like that.
He rose to the challenge. He's a 202.
It's true. So he sitting 202 with a 250 on base and striking out 34% of the time. So, you know, hurrah for Bubba Starling. But we talked about the fan stuff. We'll leave on this.
We were trying to be positive.
Yes. Ugh. I saw on Twitter just a minute ago, I retweeted it. I don't know if you have Twitter access, Mike, but there are two gentlemen who made the trek out to the Royals game tonight and have praying mantis heads on.
Oh, like, my God.
Masks. It's just... it's simultaneously amazing and just horribly, horribly depressing. So I don't know.
I don't get the rally. I don't get the dressing up at game. I don't get that. I mean, if you like it, if somebody likes it out, that's great. You do it. It's not for me. And Mantis is
I always kind of think, as far as bugs are concerned, I'm not a bug guy. Okay, I'm not like entomologists or whatever they're called. That's definitely not me. But from an abstract, I always thought praying mantises were kind of cool. Did you remember the show? There was a show called Mantis when we were kids. Do you remember this?
Mantis? No.
Oh man, I loved the show. I think it was only on for one season. It was on like NBC or something. But it was this dude, right?
Mantis.
He's paraplegic, and look it up. Mantis TV show. And he's a paraplegic, and he is a genius, and he created this suit that like fused to his spine, like Dr. Octopus style, and allowed him to walk again, right? But not only that, it made him like stronger, you know, because it was a full on like exosuit. Sure. And so he became a superhero, and he like fought crime and stuff. Oh man, I thought it was so cool, but the rest of America did not for it. It was only about one season's worth of television there.
It looks like that was seven episodes.
Yeah.
No, two seasons.
Oh, two seasons?
Yeah, let's see. Season one, 14 episodes. Season two, seven. So mid-season cancellation.
There it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of shows don't get that.
That's true. That's true. A lot of better shows don't get that. So
yeah.
But it was when the praying mantis thing started, that's what I first thought of. And, you know, I really thought we talk about it being a possible a totem of power, perhaps. But what really almost sold me on that before my hopes and dreams were horribly crushed was two nights in a row they had the mantis thing, two nights in a row they had wins, and then the very next day, I leave my office to go home for the day. And what do I see when I approach my car? There is a praying mantis on the hood of my car. Shit you not. I sent you a picture.
Mm-hmm.
You can go see it on Twitter. I posted one on Twitter as well. So I thought that was just like stupidly funny. I don't know how long I've been driving. You know, almost 16 years now. And I have never had a praying mantis on the front of my car. And then that day,
it just happens at that point.
But at the very same time, I could very well be the reason that the Mantis has flamed out so quickly, because I did not remove it from my car. I just drove with it, and he was hanging. He was hanging for a while, okay, and then like it was kind of crazy. He's like he turns and faces the wind, you know, head on.
He's like burying
straight
it.
out, and then he like rears up on his back legs and he like fans out his little wings, and then he's like moving his front arms, you know how they're kind of like hooked, you know, and he's like doing like a swim move into the wind and everything. It was like a, I don't know, like a power technique or something. I was like, this dude knows what he's doing. And then just like boom, it caught him, and he, you know, smacked my windshield, and I think it died. So
it was so close.
it was so majestic.
You almost had it.
And it actually, because I was like enthralled watching this thing, you know, as I'm driving, you know, and then like it actually kind of made me jump a little bit when it just saw that it just flew back and nailed my windshield. And it was like, aw.
Oh, and then the Royals lost that night.
And they did lose that night. And I don't think they've won since. So blame me for the praying mantis flaming out. So there you have it.
I think it's fair.
I think that's a good note. I think that's a good way to end this show this evening.
The Adventures of the Mantis.
The Adventures of the Rally Mantis and his destruction by Jeff Herr.
Directed. I don't know what the lifespan of a mantis is anyway. Is a week? I don't.
Thank you, Google. We can figure this out. Lifespan of a praying. It auto-completes. We're not the first person to have this question. After the final molt, most species have wings. Oh, that's what mine has. I was just talking about.
Yeah.
Though some species remain wingless, particularly female. The lifespan of a mantis depends on the species. Smaller ones may live 4 to 8 weeks, while larger species may live 4 to 6 months. Oh, it could have lived the whole rest of the season.
Oh.
It could have been there, and I killed it.
Well, you know, I mean, that if you go back to it, the same night, this I don't know if it was the same mantis or not, but it jumped up on Mike Swanson, who's their VP of media, and he like threw it off to the side or something, and people were like, oh, he killed it. And then they said, oh, no, it's fine, it's right here. And it's like, okay, hold on, I know,
yeah, like when
I know what's going on here. This is
your parents accidentally step on your gerbil and they just go out and buy you a new one and think you won't notice.
Right. It's like, that's not the only mantis in the stadium, I'm sure. You probably just dug up. And the other day, the mantis was like brown, but the one that was on camera was green. And so it's like, you know, who's telling the truth here? I mean, what kind of game are you trying to pull there, Swanee?
Yeah, I mean, basically the Woodward and Bernstein of the praying mantis, the fake praying mantis world here.
Mantis truthers. So, teach the controversy.
Mantis truthers, yes. If you want to try and pull a fast one on us, Royals, you better wake up pretty early in the morning to get something past Twitter detective Michael Engel and myself.
Right. They also said that they put it in a shoebox one of those nights, and then the next day Josh Vernier was tweeting, the Royals are surprised to see the mantis still here. I'm like, hold on. No. It's already been reported that they had it in a shoebox. They knew it was there.
They knew it. They brought it.
Surprised? Why would they be surprised? Doesn't add up.
It doesn't add up one bit. You know.
No.
And I told you this. We can truly leave on this last story.
Right. We've spent way too much time on a mantis, but
this was funny. So when I was in college, my freshman year, we had. There was like this run of these weird little bugs. They look like ladybugs, but they were kind of a bright orange. And if they were like some sort of Japanese beetle or something. I don't know why they were here or how they got to Kirksville, Missouri, but they would get on you like a ladybug. You know, you'd be like, oh, cool, it's a ladybug, whatever. But these ones would get on there, and then after a while, it would just be this like intense sting, and it's like clamping down. They bite you. You know, it wasn't like super painful, and they weren't like venomous or anything, but it would hurt a little bit. You'd be like, what the hell is that?
Right.
But this was so bad, and I think they were like killing plants and stuff. So the natural enemy of these beetles was the praying mantis. And so they flew in all these praying mantises to eat these bugs and eliminate the problem. And for whatever reason, these mantises would all congregate in the empty parking lot, and with the because it had the light
under the light, the lights, there are probably other bugs going to the light, yeah. And they're trying to feast.
So we would go and like we'd walk to a party, and there's just we'd walk through this parking lot, and it's just infested with praying mantises everywhere.
There's
like
one
hundreds,
lucky
no
parking
joke.
Lot.
Yeah, and so we there was this one roommate who I had who was from like a smaller town in Missouri, and we were like, oh, you know, you should totally eat one. And he's like, well, how much would you pay me to eat one? And I was like, I will pay you $1 to eat one. He's like, okay, reaches down, grabs one of the big ones, and then just fucking chomps it. Two bites, toast. And then he goes, oh, I think it bit my tongue when I was eating it. I was like, oh, man. He goes, you know, it tastes like hazelnut. So, moral of the story, praying mantises taste like hazelnut.
Also, you probably didn't need to even pay the guy. You probably would have done it if you would have asked him.
Oh,
twice.
I'm certain. I think I asked him that, and he said he would have done it anyway. But I paid him the dollar because
sure.
He just ate a praying mantis.
Fair is fair.
Yeah, you know, I made a deal. I'm not a man who welches.
You don't welch on the mantis bets.
No, that is for certain.
Yeah.
So with that note, I think that is the prime time to leave.
We've done enough damage.
Yes, we have. If you're still with us, thank you so much. Thank you for listening. Couldn't do this show without you. Absolutely love having all the fans and everything. If you have any praying mantis stories, please send them. We will relay them. We can – any praying mantis or any other bug or object-related thing in relation to the Royals or just a funny story, you know, we'll pass it along. So, because why not? Stories are fun. But with that, we will leave you this evening and or morning, whenever you're listening to the show. Hopefully, the Royals can do some fun stuff and give us, you know, some entertaining things to talk about as we kind of grind out this season here. But we will certainly be back every week for the rest of the season, regardless of how well the Royals are doing. We are here for you, ladies and gentlemen. So stick with us. Thanks for stopping in. We will see you next week for sure. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
And that was Sinfonia in A Major by Sam Martini. It's noted that the third vicar of Dunshire would play that every night before delivering sermons. It's a fine piece of music. It's 10 past the hour here on Vault Public Radio. We wanted to remind you, dear listener, that this week is Pledge Week at the Vault. Your support is vital, and giving to Vault Public Radio is one way to help support your community. And speaking of community, you won't find a better friendly community than the staff at Kelly's Westport Inn. Like public radio, Kelly's is a staple of the community, a standard, an icon, a Kansas City tradition. Fine patrons like yourself have been supporting Kelly's Westport Inn since 1947, when, I'd note, that Randall Kelly poured his first pint. Contribute to Vault Public Radio today, you can get an official VPR tote bag, or you could stop by Kelly's for an affordable pint, the best pizza in town, and a few games of Papa Shot. We're grateful for your support at VPR and for your support at Kelly's Westport Inn. Enjoy the tradition. And now, 4 hours of Best of the Baroque Period, followed by the Amstein Theaters and the Horse You Rode In On, hosted by Joseph Guevara Amherst.